listening to Creative Friction, a podcast for ambitious creatives and agency owners that are looking for honest insights on how to scale their business sustainably and profitably. Each episode, we dig into candid conversations about the most pressing topics in our industry and offer up insights and resources to inspire you to take action.
From talking about the latest and greatest in AI to unpacking how our industry can better represent and reflect our modern world, we're here to guide you on agency growth, marketing strategies, and how to make a meaningful impact as a creative entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome back to Creative Friction. This is a podcast for creative entrepreneurs navigating the challenges of growing a business while staying true to their creative roots.
Each episode is recorded live so guests can join and ask questions that matter to them and their business.
I'm Madeline Reeves.
And I'm Jeff Mead. And today we're here to talk about the concept of rainbow washing and the negative impact it can have when brands performatively showcase support for LGBTQ people during Pride season.
And I'm really, really glad that we're taking time to dig into this topic today. It's interesting, to say the least, that, you know, when we planned this episode, it was long before Pride had unfolded. And as I was joking with you before we hit live, you know, the internet slash the corporations have given us plenty to talk about on today's episode. And I'm also really looking forward to getting the thoughts of our listeners as the conversation unfolds today. So please, please use the comments function on LinkedIn. Jeff and I can see those as we move through the conversation. But let's get into this topic. So
absolutely. Why are we doing this topic right now?
Well, you know, obviously it's Pride Month, and you know, this is a month that unfolds every single year. And I definitely think over the past, you know, I want to say 3 years, but I'm even thinking back into the previous administration. I really feel like over the past 8 years, queer people, LGBTQ plus people have really started to look at this month and particularly push back against just this annual kind of flurry of performative marketing from brands that are trying to build relevance and reach, you know, the LGBT community and LGBTQ dollars, quite frankly, mm-hmm. and anybody who's allied with that community. And, you know, as a queer person, it is very visible the way that this time of year is becoming increasingly corporate and increasingly monetized. And, you know, there's a double-edged sword. You know, I think back to the conversation that we had during Black History Month where you were like, you know, there's beauty in it. Like the visibility is amazing. And it's great to see, you know, examples of your community being celebrated. But it also, you know, especially for me this year, feels very tone deaf because you have folks over on one side of the camp, you know, selling, you know, rainbow merch mm-hmm. and very few people who are using this moment to call attention to the really, really severe issues at hand in a way that acknowledges the struggles that are going on for LGBTQ people, especially trans people in this country right now. And so it's like, you know, I'm a big believer you can't have it both ways. You can't just like show up for the good times and the parades and then right. not be also willing to step up and support marginalized communities. We don't want to be a marketing stunt. Mm-hmm. It's not about making your company values look good. And so I feel like there's a lot of examples of people marketing in a really tone deaf way right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah. And it's really, you know, we've done Black History Month pod episode. We did Women's History Month pod episode. And kind of looking at this, you start seeing a theme of this color washing going on where corporations mm-hmm. feel really comfortable coming in. They're like, oh, you know, we're looking at our PR calendar or our marketing calendar. And so let's change up our social media avatar. Let's, you know, go with some branded items in the store. We got 30 days to sell this stuff out. And then it's business as usual. And mm-hmm. and it's frustrating that companies feel comfortable doing this, right? Where they're just like, let's go after these dollars. And then after it's done, then we'll switch up to the next thing. And this is essentially mm-hmm. what we'll do every year. And I know what must be tough for our listeners is if you're an agency or you're a creative working with some of these big companies, how do you play a part? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you lend your voice to make sure that they're not going off the rails on your watch, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's like you don't want to be, as an agency owner, you know, you don't want to be the behind the scenes person creating content or being a part of a campaign that's going to come off as super tone deaf or worse, offensive to folks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So where do you want to jump in? You had a lot of thoughts leading into this conversation.
Jeff is like, I've seen the outline. It's long. Well, I want to start with just a proper definition. You know, I want to start with, you know, what exactly is rainbow washing? For those who are not familiar with the concept, it's a term that really means, you know, using or adding rainbow colors or, you know, queer centric imagery to advertising, apparel, accessories, landmarks in order to indicate progressive support for LGBTQ equality with a minimum effort towards actually supporting the community at hand. So in layman's terms, what I mean is like rainbow washing is when businesses, conglomerates, or other for-profit organizations use rainbow pride colors, you know, use this month to suggest to consumers, we support this community without actually putting in any actual effort to support the folks that they are claiming that they care about. And so, you know, examples in the media this week that feel like rainbow washing to me is the Bud Light campaign. You know, Bud Light came out with a campaign, you know, that was supposedly, you know, pride centric, and they've had a few misses over the years, mm-hmm. but this one in particular, you know, because of the political climate we're living in right now, sparked a lot of backlash and hatred. And rather than doubling down and really advocating and saying this message is important, we care about queer people, they pulled the ad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is identical to what is happening with Target right now. And I shared about this in my newsletter this week. You know, Target, they've been putting out Pride collections for a while. And like, to their credit, you know, Target, you know, does, you know, seems to, I've seen a lot of content on social media that in recent months, hire, you know, queer creators for the creation of that, the merch and apparel and designs and stuff. But same thing, huge social media backlash, huge, you know, number of people coming into their stores, some of whom were being super aggressive or, you know, sharing shit on social media saying, you know, shut down Target. And instead of, you know, doubling down and supporting the community, they removed a number of the products and put the displays in the back corner of the store.
Mm.
And I just think that, you know, if you're not willing to put your corporate profits on the line, if you're not really willing to super stand up for the communities you're claiming to support, that's rainbow washing,
right,
in my book.
Right. I'm so curious. I know you had called that out in your newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
How would you advise Target in that situation, right? Because what was very real was the fact that there was a threat to some of their employees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just curious how you would have, and I'm not asking you to unpack the whole plan.
Yeah, but, yeah. Yeah, you know, that's the real hard part about the time we're living in, right? Like, is that people are going beyond just ideological dispute of saying, you know, I don't believe in this, you know, which is like, I loved these kind of like, there was this great queer movement this week of people going into Target and like, there were, you know, videos on TikTok and Instagram where people would like pick up a shirt and be like, I hate blue shirts. And because of this, you know, I boycott Target, you know, or like, you know, I think Bugs Bunny is offensive. And so I'm like, you know, you have an option always as the consumer to shop at another store. Don't buy it. But, right. You know, I think unfortunately we're living in a time where people have been activated towards a different level of hatred. And I think that that's really scary. And I think that that's really real. And I think it's really important to talk about, because if you're not a part of this community, you might not know that there are many Pride celebrations that have been canceled this year.
Mm.
There are many, many, you know, cities that have deemed it too volatile, too dangerous for queer folks to get together and celebrate in the ways that we're used to.
Wow.
And that's a real impact on our community, mm-hmm. right? Because this is like the moment.
Right.
And there's lots of queer moments throughout the year, but this is like our moment. And you know, Chicago, you know, parts of Florida, like major cities that are gathering places for queer folks are shutting down gatherings. And that's not even, you know, and maybe we'll get into this later, talking about the ways that like actual legislation is really affecting the lives of these folks. But to go back to this example of Target, you know, what do you do, right? So I would take a page out of North Face's book. So North Face is doing a campaign right now with one of my favorite content creators. Their name is Patagonia. And Patagonia is this amazing drag queen who does drag that has an emphasis on education about nature and climate change. Mm-hmm. And so they partnered this Pride season with North Face. And same sort of thing happened, a pretty severe amount of backlash. And, you know, they released a statement. They doubled down the campaign efforts. You know, in the case of Target, you know, I do think there might be, you know, a question of, you know, how do you maybe move more e-commerce product than in-person product?
Right, right.
Or how do you, you know, up security so that those people just are not able to hold a presence or a space in the store? But I think for me, the missed opportunity was a moment to say, we deeply stand with the community. And then like, I'm like, where are those dollars going? Like, that's the other reason why this feels like so exploitative, in my opinion, is I'm like, I haven't seen them pledge any commitment to fighting anti-trans legislation.
Right, right.
I haven't seen them say, you know, all of the profits from our Pride, you know, merch is going to XYZ. Like, they had an opportunity where they could have done something to say, we're not only going to continue to carry these products, but we're also going to make sure that the revenue generated is really going towards something that's going to make more of an impact and show our commitment to this community. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm just like, yeah, this is clearly about corporate profits. And the irony of that, right, is if anybody watched Target stock price last week, it tanked last Friday.
Oh, I wasn't aware.
It tanked. You know, we put a graph on our social media and it's like, you know, they have a consumer base that is very, well, part of major America, which is pro supporting LGBTQ plus rights. Mm-hmm. And so when they didn't respond in a proactive way, their shareholders did.
It's so interesting because what I like what you touched on, where I would have loved to see them go is really to say, we talked to our employees, you know, when we went down this road, our commitment was to raise X amount of dollars for these groups, right? As a result of the climate, whatever's happening in our store, we are still going to have that commitment, right? Mm-hmm. But that commitment was never there. It really was about slapping a pride flag on stuff and selling it. And so mm-hmm. that's why they're like, all right, let's just move it to the back of the store. We'll sell something mm-hmm. else. But if you came out and said, no, we're still going to honor our commitment because, like you said, let's double down and really show that we care. But that wasn't part of the narrative. It was really about selling products.
Yeah. And I, you know, there's so many different examples of this. Like, I'm like, okay, you know, we can harsh on Bud Light or on Target or others all day. But I also think it's really important to like look around this month and do an assessment of like what is genuine. Mm-hmm. Do these companies employ queer people and do they pay them fairly? Or are they just like, you know, doing that same tokenizing thing of picking somebody out to highlight during Pride Month and being like, thank you so much mm-hmm. for your, you know, cultural contribution. This whole rainbow thing of just using it to push products. Another one that's like rampant right now is funny. When I logged onto LinkedIn this morning, little flag in the logo. I'm like, fuck your flag. Like, what are you doing as a company?
Right.
You know, show me. Like, I want companies to, you know, maybe this is too far-fetched for smaller organizations, but give me a report. Show me what you're tangibly doing to benefit the lives and livelihood of folks in this community. And then also, quite frankly, like, there are so many places of work that are still not safe mm-hmm. for queer people to even work. And then my personal favorite is, you know, the number of people, especially major corporations, who run these pride campaigns to get somebody's dollars while actively contributing
right,
to
right.
causes, campaigns, political, you know, situations that are actively undermining the rights of queer people. So to me, I think it's a really important month for us as consumers, whether that's of content or products, to really do a second look and say, wait a second, you're saying all these things, but if this is really one of your values, you're going to be able to show that in the actions that you're taking as a company. And so it's our job to do a little bit of assessment there and be like, is this real? You know, mm-hmm. is this, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. Really, what I would love them to do is lead with the receipts, right? Like yes. anytime we've talked about this for other marginalized communities, you can come up with a great marketing campaign, but if you led with the receipts, then I can say, oh, this is for real. They're really doing mm-hmm. this. And that's the message you want to get across, where people can say, all right, I mess with them. I can buy these products. I can support them because they're supporting us really and truly.
Yeah. And I think about too, like one thing that came to mind as you were talking was, you know, what is the campaign that runs year round? Mm-hmm. That's always my question, right? I've been working with a client and for many years, 3 years now, and we were doing some presentation creation for them this week. And I had, you know, asked for access to their internal approved stock library, stock image library. Mm-hmm. And that library contained diversity. That library contained beautiful photography of queer people. It contained, you know, it just was such an indicative reflection. And that's the imagery they're using year round.
Right.
On their site, on their blog, you know, on internal presentations. And so it's not about, you know, this campaign that happens in June or February. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that they as a company believe that visibility matters and therefore are representing that in all of the content they create. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's another thing too, is, you know, if you're claiming to support, you know, the queer community or the Black community or any of these causes, I don't even want to say causes, I'm like people,
right,
humans,
right.
if you're a part of these initiatives, and I can't go to your website and see visible representation, I know that that's a performative gesture. Mm-hmm. I know that you're just trying to tap into like the market moment, or like you were saying earlier, it's like this thing that happens now, particularly I think because of social media, of being like, okay, it's June. Right. let's make it rainbows,
right,
guys.
Right.
You know,
it's just like, I can see it, right? It's really just this social media calendar, mm-hmm. it's their marketing calendar, and they're just kind of checking off the boxes. And that's why I go back to, you know, the place many of our listeners are in, you know, when this does come up, right? When a different month comes up and, you know, your corporate client is about to hit the switch, you know, how do you, I think the tough part is, how do you push back in a way that's authentic to you as an agency, and really making sure, as we touched on, that, you know, if something does come out that you can, you know, you can say, yeah, I signed off on that, you know, like this is that, that's really the tough part, I think.
Yeah, I think that's where we have to get really curious. And I say curious, I was having a discussion with my team this morning about values. And we were talking about how, you know, bringing curiosity to these kind of, you know, complex or possibly even tense conversations is the best thing we can do as creatives, mm-hmm. to say, okay, like, I'm interested. Like, because again, I don't think it's an inherently bad thing to want to create visibility in this kind of, you know, key moment where we're celebrating queer people. I don't think that's an inherently bad thing. And I don't think that a lot of people in organizations intend to rainbow wash. I think they do it not being informed. Mm-hmm. And again, just like hopping on the trend of the moment. And so I think as agency leaders, we have the opportunity to go, okay, great. Tell me more. Mm-hmm. Before we start externalizing this as a value or participating in this conversation, what are we doing internally? Because equity work, as we both know, it starts inside the organization.
Right.
And so this is an opportunity to say, okay, you know, what are the employee resource groups that we have in place for the queer community? What kind of work are they doing? What is, you know, walk me through the DEI lens. What do we have going on there to support and educate and make sure that we have a safe space to work for queer folks? Mm-hmm. Great. Who are our queer employees and how do they feel about what's going on in the org? Would they want to participate in a campaign like this? Hey, can I talk to them?
Right.
Like, I think that's the big thing, is like, don't let an organization throw people forward and be like, oh, here's our token.
Right, right.
Hey, like,
exactly.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I'd love to have a conversation with some queer employees inside the org. Who is the best people for me to talk to? And you have a really valuable position as an outsider to maybe get some honest answers that, you know, are not gonna happen if it's just like a boss, you know, putting somebody on the spot. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's also about, you know, how is this an extension of the organization's value? How is this an extension in the organization's? And how are we going to continue to show support like this year round?
Right.
You know, and if the organization is not willing to enter in those conversations, if they're not really willing to say, this is how we're going to put this campaign into action in a way that has a meaningful impact, in a way that gives back all year, in a way that, you know, hires and pays queer creators, which is a soapbox I could get on for a little while. If there's no willingness to do that, I think that we have a responsibility to the client to say, I know that this is kind of the cultural moment right now, but I'm not sure we've done enough work yet internally at the organization for this to come off as genuine to our customers. And let's be honest, today's consumers are really watching for a level of authenticity, particularly as you get even younger. I mean, I think the stat is like 20 to 30% of Gen Z identify as queer. And they're going to push back if they see something that's performative. And so you have a responsibility as the leader in those conversations to say like, hey, this is actually going to come off really, really not well for us. Mm-hmm. And so maybe until we're ready to really have these moments in a genuine way, let's work on this for the next year. Let's make this a priority to figure out how we can shift this so that next year we can enter into this conversation in a way that's coming from the right place and doesn't feel performative in nature.
I love it. I love giving that sort of advice to a company. And I imagine their pushback would be, but all of our competitors are doing X, right? And so then what happens when we're being quiet? I think that's where a lot of companies struggle, because I think a lot of them know, we know we're not truly invested in this. But we don't want to be quiet, right? Because the climate allows you to just kind of jump in and jump out. And so when you're quiet, I think that's when people get scared. And then that's when a lot of folks on social or wherever can start to say, hey, you know, we don't see anything. And so I would ask you, thinking about the advice you just gave, would it be safer to just not say anything? Or if they push back on you to say, well, could we at least switch up our logo on, you know, Instagram? You know, what would you say to that?
I mean, and granted, I feel really fortunate to work with a caliber of client that's already doing this level of work. And so I definitely have like a colored, pen intended, colored lens here. It made me think a little bit about summer 2020 and when everybody was jumping in the fray with their, you know, their statement, right, about, you know, their stance on Black Lives Matter and what inclusion looked like inside of their organization. And it was like, y'all, this moment happened like 5 seconds ago. And oh, by the way, it's been happening forever.
Right.
And so for you to come in and claim that you've got solutions is inappropriate and quite frankly, you know, offensive to a lot of folk, particularly folk from those communities. And to me, I would challenge organizations to, if this is work they're really committed to just say one thing, which is, you know, we recognize, respect, and honor the LGBTQ plus community. And we recognize as an organization, we have more work to do in this arena. This month is about listening. This month is about internal work. This month is about training, you know, so that we can contribute to the cause and the conversation meaningfully in the future. But I think that's the thing that not enough people do is the internal work, because there's no marketing to campaign to be had there, right?
Right.
It's just about listening. It's just about reflecting. But I also think there's something really powerful in that, of saying like, rather than us just jumping into the fray and slapping a rainbow logo together, you know, we're dedicating time internally to conversations about this month, or we're, you know, we brought in these speakers, or we, you know. And again, that can even get a little performative too,
but
I think it's more important in that season to say like, we're doing the work as opposed to being like, here's us just, you know, showing up with some merchandise. I think the other thing too, you know, particularly for product-based companies during this time of the year, is just like, I don't want to see a single person who is not a queer-led organization making a goddamn dollar off of something that is pride related. Unless 100% of those profits are going to an organization that deserves that money. Like I'm like, this is the month where the only thing that companies should be doing is promoting and selling the work of people who are from this community or giving dollars to this community. And that's it. Like, I think that we've really got to question that. Like, I'm like, I love them as a product company, but it's like Bombas. They did, you know, rainbow socks, you know, mm-hmm. 1 year in June. And I'm like, Bombas doesn't need any more of our money.
Right.
But I can tell you, like, there's literally a directory I love. I featured it in my newsletter this week called Everywhere is Queer. It's a great Instagram project. And it's literally a directory of queer-owned businesses. And there's hundreds on there mm-hmm. who could use your dollars in support of the work that they're doing.
It reminds me of, and I think you brought this up in our Black History Month conversation, but just the concept of passing the mic, right? Yes. Like, I think this is really when you tell your client, like, hey, you know, fall back, you know, let's really listen and start to understand, but then also let's support the community. And the best ways to support the community is to leverage our platform for their benefit. And
yes.
And really, you know, we touch so many people. And I think about some of the brands that we mentioned, right? Like, if they were mm-hmm. to leverage their platform for the benefit of this community, of the queer community, it's amazing what they can do, right? Instead of the focus being on how do we make our margins on this product? If you're truly supporting the community, that stuff comes back in so many ways.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the difference between, you know, something that is just leveraging the moment, pushing a product and building a genuine relationship with this community. That to me is the difference of that example of the North Face campaign. To my knowledge, and I could be wrong, I haven't been on the North Face website today, that campaign that they're doing with Patagonia, there's no revenue directly tied to it. There's no product that I've seen pushed in association with that campaign. They're actually, I think, raising dollars to give back. Mm. And what I think is really vital about that is that's a longer term brand perspective, which is that, hello, like, there's lots of queer people in the world. And just like any other type of consumer, we're going to shop at the places that we feel supported and seen and like represent our values. And guess what? That's a seed that is now planted in my mind that if I'm holding up, I don't know, I'm like this brand of North Face mm-hmm. in the future for a purchasing decision, I might go with North Face because of the fact that I remember that they care and give back to the communities that I'm passionate
right,
about, right? And so to me, I think that that's the other thing that's oftentimes missing from these moments is that everybody is just thinking about, you know, how does this affect our revenue or how does this affect our you know, our benefit our shareholders kind of thing, as opposed to saying, you know, how does this speak to who we are as a brand? Mm-hmm. How does this connect us more closely with our customers? How does this offer an opportunity for us to showcase our values in action? And those are the things that don't necessarily pay dividends immediately, but I also think are really important in a moment like this. And if you're not in it for the long game, you're not actually an ally to anyone.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much flip-flopping, right? Where if you're putting messages out there and then somebody calls you on it and you pull it back, then the consumer is like, do you really care? And so on the other side, I look at a brand like a Chick-fil-A, right? Mm. And so you can feel any way you want about them, but they are so true to who their brand is. Mm-hmm. And I think what's great about that from a consumer perspective is it allows you to make a decision with your dollars. Mm-hmm. You can say, mm-hmm. oh, I know exactly where they stand. Mm-hmm. Whereas the tough part with a lot of these other brands who show up for the different months is you're like, oh, they're an ally. And then, you know, you see something on social, you're like, oh, wait a minute, they supported which politician? And so mm-hmm. that stuff is really where you just get really fed up. You're like, just be authentic. You don't have to market to everyone. And I know a lot of mm-hmm. these big brands feel like they have to, but mm-hmm. just stand for something and we'll follow, right? Like the people who believe in the causes, the what you're trying to support will be there, but the constant flip-flopping is when you got in hot water, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's really funny you bring up the Chick-fil-A example because I was reading some consumer reporting this morning and I was talking about the top brands that have a satisfaction or approval rating from customers, and they had the top 10 brands and Chick-fil-A was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting because when I looked at the list, I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, it was like Costco and I think I'm like, maybe Target was on there. I can't remember, but they were all brands that I was like, yeah, consumers, you know, have a connection to these brands and they kind of stand up for what they believe in. And Chick-fil-A stood out to me because they're a polarizing brand in my opinion.
Right.
But they deliver on what they say they're going to. Now, I'm not a fan. Right. I'm not going to eat their sandwiches. Right. Whenever my kids want it, I'm like, we're going to Popeyes. but you know, they do stand for what they stand for. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not the case. I mean, I did my homework. I put together a list because I want to educate everybody. So my kind of main ones were Toyota, mm-hmm. top donator to LA Pride, while also donating, you know, more than $500,000 to anti-LGBTQ politicians in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Walmart jumped on the bandwagon, no surprise, had a Pride and Joy section to their website, gave millions of dollars to anti-LGBTQ legislation. Bud Light, they had a terrible campaign this year. They had a terrible one before. I don't know if anybody remembered the Let's Grab a Beer, Queens campaign,
right.
Which was just offensive in my opinion. And again, donating to anti-LGBTQ politicians, and the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. It's like CVS, AT&T, Verizon, all these other companies. And so I think that there is a really, really important factor for us as consumers to dig in and make an assessment in terms of the brands that we're buying from and saying like, okay, like, do we allow it? And to me, there's another piece too, which I think is hard because it puts pressure on these communities that are already marginalized and under-supportive. But to me, it's like the sponsor dollar thing mm-hmm. is a really important thing for organizers to ask themselves is like, do we really want their money? You know, because this is the parade is a big moment. Right. It costs a lot of money to pull off. But what kind of brand equity are you buying when you let Bud Light have a float in the parade when, you know, behind the scenes they're actively supporting campaigns right. that hurt queer people.
Right.
And so I just think that that's also something that is really important to contend with, particularly right now. You know, the attack on trans people is so, so insane. I think it's over 500 bills currently in some level of state level progress that are actively, you know, harmful to queer and trans people and about repealing our rights. And this is no time to sit on the sidelines, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I've got to be honest. I hate big banks. I hate what they do with our money and all the insane fees they charge us for basically no reason. So when it came time to pick a business banking platform, I knew I needed to find one that actually cared about small businesses and aligned with my core values. That is why I chose Relay.
Relay is a no-fee online business banking and money management platform that helps small businesses take control of their cash flow and get crystal clear on what they're earning, spending, and saving. What most small businesses don't consider is how big of an impact money management can have on their day-to-day financial clarity. With Relay, business owners can bank with no account or overdraft fees with no minimum balance required. Issue up to 50 virtual or physical Visa debit cards, send payments and deposits via ACH and wire, integrate banking with accounting software like QuickBooks Online and Xero, and so much more.
As the CEO of a small business, I love how dedicated Relay is to helping small business owners like me understand exactly how much they're earning, spending, and saving, and consider them one of the keys to helping Fearless Foundry grow and manage our money with ease. You can check out Relay by visiting creativefriction.com/relay and apply for an account in less than 10 minutes.
It's interesting. It reminds me, you know, prior to being an agency consultant, you know, I was working in retail and I tell people it was like a boutique version of Foot Locker. We had about 100 mm-hmm. stores. And what's interesting, and this is not like to let these corporations off, but I remember when I was running marketing, I had all these store managers. And so I would just say, hey, you can make the decision on some of your local stuff. Mm. And so my consumer was 14 to 24. And what that meant was, and it wasn't like they were giving money to politicians, but what they were doing is they would bring in a local rapper into a store, right? Or whoever. But then this stuff would get on social and I think to myself, oh my God, I could never have a parent in the store with what that person was just saying. And so I look at some of these, and again, this was a much smaller scale. We had like 100 stores. So I look at a company like a Walmart and I start to say, how do they manage all of this? Because I just remember how tough it was where I wanted them to kind of manage their local area. And so I left some decisions up to them. But then I'd come into work on a Monday morning and there'd be all these emails like, did you see what happened in, you know, Cleveland or whatever? And you're like, oh my God, I can't manage everything.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, looking at it from that side, I'm like, logistically, it's so hard to manage this stuff. Because I can imagine you can have a company like Walmart and a local store manager in some random place is like, oh, we support this politician because of X. But then he also does this and he's not supporting LGBTQ plus rights. And so then that bubbles up to headquarters and they're like, oh my God, we just supported this parade and then this is happening. Mm-hmm. All that to say is I just know it's a logistical nightmare being on a much smaller version of it. And it's just so hard to manage for these big companies.
Do you think though, because I always go back to the barometer of values here. And so I'm like, do you think it would have made a difference in your circumstance or for these large organizations, you know, to put out these are the values, these are the causes, you know, that we stand behind and for, you know, regardless of location, regardless, because I'm like, say prior to, we're going to run with the rapper in story.
Right.
prior to that happening, had you guys, you know, put out some clear, strong statements, operationalize the belief system that we are a family friendly environment. You know?
Yes. Yeah. And we did. And it was just really funny to me how someone could interpret something. And was like, no, that's not, you know, and their rebuttal was, but all the kids, the 14 to 24 year olds love them. Right. And so they were like, hey, parents aren't coming in, even though it was part of the guidelines that we still want to run a family-friendly place. Yeah. The way they saw it was all the kids in this age group love this guy. And so it was up to interpretation. And you're like,
yeah,
I can kind of see that, but you do see how this goes against policy. So,
I
mean, it's, hey, you know, these big companies, they have people who manage this stuff. Now, I didn't have someone to manage this stuff, right? So it's a little different. I can appreciate logistically how tough some of this stuff must be. And it isn't like you get away with it all of a sudden, but I can appreciate the same way that somebody can say, oh, you donated to this politician. It seems like if you cared about this stuff, you would have a role in your organization that's almost like a watchdog group to make sure that if you really care about the queer community, that you're also not investing in programs or people that harm them. Right. Same way about if you care about the Black community, you're not investing in politicians or anything that's going to harm them. And if I'm Walmart, if I'm Budweiser, I have the resources to do that. And so the question really is, why aren't they doing this?
I mean, I've got my theories is that I don't think they care. I don't think they care. You know, there is still a system in place that allows them to make a whole bucket of money. And again, this is just for a lot of organizations, it's becoming a market opportunity. And this will be really, you know, this will be really interesting from a marketing perspective over the next 10 plus years. Because like we said, you know, Gen Z is the queerest demographic yet. And, you know, they're gonna become, you know, mainstream consumer dollars. You know, a lot of them are still too young to do a ton of purchasing or economic deciding. You know, have a huge influence on the economy just yet, but it's coming. And so there's a lot of brands that are going to have to entirely reinvent themselves. And I also think there's a lot of brands that are going to fall out of existence because they're never going to resonate with the modern consumer. Great example of this, I think, is like, you know, there's so many people, there was only two reactions to the new Ariel movie, right? And you have people who are like, oh my gosh, you know, this is undoing history. And I'm like, it's a make-believe story about a mermaid.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's let's be that. Clear. And so all of it was magical and make-believe to begin with. But there's also this unlocking of a huge demographic of consumers who are so excited to be seen mm-hmm. in the Disney pantheon. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, you also have younger consumers like my son, who's just like, she's a mermaid and I'm stoked. Like, doesn't even like that, you know, the context, because he's grown up with content that is so diverse to begin with.
Right, right.
He has no cataloging or care. What is the race of the mermaid, right?
Right.
But in that same notion, what Disney is doing is looking out into the future and going, our consumer is evolving. And if we don't evolve our brand to be a part of that conversation, mm-hmm. this is the content that they're creating now that in 20 years, somebody's going to look back and be like, oh, remember when that came
right,
out?
Right, right. And yeah. I was going to say, and people voted with their dollars, right? Mm-hmm. It did amazing. It's beautiful yeah. to see.
It's beautiful to see. And so I think, I mean, that's what I hope. I hope that these major organizations will recognize that there is a milestone moment for them to either recognize the evolving demographic and see the humanity and support people, or that consumers will show up and vote with their dollars and say, this is not, you know, this is not something I can support and be a part of. You know, this is not an organization that I can shop from. And therefore, those companies fall away, because the more and more of us who share this belief system, I mean, that's the wild thing for me. Like, that's the part where the Target piece was so hurtful, in my opinion, this past week, because every emeritus poll for the past 10 plus years shows that the vast majority of Americans are in favor of honoring and respecting the LGBTQ plus community. And so what you have is this very vocal minority.
Right, right.
That is defining and deciding these things. And so I think it's really important for us to recognize, too, that allyship in this season is about stepping up and pushing back against people who are trying to say, like, no, we shouldn't have representation, or no, we shouldn't have this kind of content or merchandise available.
That's actually a good segue. What do you think consumers can do to push back against rainbow washing?
Mm. Well, number one, don't buy that bullshit. You know, don't support it. Don't shop from organizations. And again, there's lots of great resources on the web that are fantastic ways to just audit and assess, you know, if a company is really giving back in this way, and also to find other folks that you can shop from and support. The other thing I think is that I am a big fan of kind of call out culture in this moment, because for people who don't have the time or the knowledge to understand, you know, what is rainbow washing and who's doing it, we have an opportunity to share that information mm-hmm. out with others so that they can say no to it. And I think, again, there's also this certain level of pushing back in terms of the people who are and aren't taking action to support the community in tangible ways. And so, again, I keep going back to this Target example, but I'm like, there could have been a moment where they said, we're making modifications in our store, but we're expanding the collection online. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to give a huge portion of the proceeds back to the ACLU or to the HRA to, like, you know, or the HRC to fight against anti-trans legislation. And so I think that's the other thing, is to look at these companies and push and say, beyond just supporting the parade, beyond just, you know, putting out this t-shirt, socks, mugs, whatever, what are you doing to further the rights of queer people and to protect the rights of queer people? And if companies don't have answers for those questions, you know, that tells you all you need to know.
Right, right. You know what's, if I'm gonna go back to that pass the mic concept as well.
Yeah.
In those situations, had a Target or any brand like that pass the mic or leverage their mm-hmm. platform, when this happened, they would have had a community coming out to support them. Mm-hmm. Like, the community mm-hmm. would have had their back and been like, going, wait a minute, time out. This is not how it's mm-hmm. going to go down. But they didn't do that. And so there was no one there that wanted to, like, ride with them and say, this isn't the way it went down. It was just Target in this case,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a testament to how how much are they actually even doing that activation of queer folks to begin with? Mm. You know, because if you don't have anyone from the community willing to stand up on your behalf, it's because you weren't including the community really in the first place.
Right, right. Yeah. That went down and everybody was like, oh, that's on you. You should have called us before.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, but that's, you know, that's on you for thinking that we were something that could be leveraged for your corporate gain, for thinking that we are just a cool slogan on a t-shirt,
right?
You know, like my favorite one that I saw, there were so many videos, people kind of trolling the merch as it started to release. And it was like, they had some live, laugh lesbian t-shirts. And I'm like, one, nobody needs that t-shirt. And two, how genuine is that in its, you know, support and understanding of the folks in this community.
Right, right. So, yeah. So I know we're coming up on a couple of minutes left here. What, you know, I think about our listeners and who our listeners are, and many of them are, you know, they're working with the targets of the world in some capacity, right? These many of these major corporations, how should they approach working with companies, you know, when a month comes around and we're celebrating Women's History? You know, Pride Month, Black History Month, right? The list kind of goes on. How do they begin to approach those conversations with their clients, you think? So it's mutually beneficial, right? I think the worst thing is for, you know, you as an agency to be working with a brand that just puts stuff out into the marketplace that is just like, you'd be uncomfortable sharing it at a dinner party, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, my other barometer is, you know, if a person from that community asked you about the campaign, how would you feel?
Right. Right.
Would it be something you would have been proud to be a part of, or would it be something you'd be like, oh, blame it on somebody
else? Right.
I think first and foremost, again, it goes back to the values assessment. It goes back to talking about how can we incorporate this into campaigns all year long. It also goes back to pushing the organizations to hire and partner with queer creators. If you're not the authority on the subject, or if you don't have representation inside your organization, we as agency owners can be the person who can signal and say, pass the mic.
Right.
This is what you should be doing in this season. Use your platform and help them identify, you know, the right folks to lead that conversation. And then also, I think that there is a opportunity to push for those dollars to be routed towards organizations that are more deserving. And that's a little bit of a tricky conversation to have with your clients, you know, especially if they're a larger corporation. But I also think that it's an opportunity to educate them about what could they build from a brand equity perspective by showing up and supporting in this season, as opposed to showing up and profiting in this season.
I love that. Yeah. You know, one thing I would add is to just the, and I've been in situations before when I had my agency of clients who, you know, wanted to jump into, you know, an African-American community and do some marketing and then hop back out. And my one fallback was always, I was willing to walk away, right? Like if it got disrespectful, I was always comfortable in my own skin that I was like, we'll just walk away. Like, this is not going to be disrespectful. And to your point, I couldn't have someone ask me about the campaign and then me say, oh yeah, I signed off on that. And, you know, hey, it wasn't like I had, when I look at the power dynamic, they had all the power. They could do what they wanted. But my relationship with them was, I'm going to advise you on how you need to navigate this community. And so there may be some things you don't agree with, but there's definitely a bar where I would say, that's going to be disrespectful. And if anybody crossed that bar, I was always comfortable. And I communicated this, not in this same way, but I was like, we will walk away, right? Like, it's just because this was disrespectful and we don't want to be a part of it. So I think you have to have that level of commitment and respect for your community where you're willing to just walk away. You're not going to stand side by side while someone disrespects your community.
Exactly. And I think also, you know, one of the pieces that came up as I was hearing you say that, Jeff, was like, you know, for you, it's very externally obvious the community that you represent, right?
Right.
But it's not always immediately clear, you know, sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't, in terms of how somebody identifies on the gender spectrum or the LGBTQ plus spectrum. And I also think that there are a lot of queer creatives out there who are being quiet about that fact. And
good point.
And so I think that also, if you are a part of this community and you feel comfortable and safe, it's important to stand up and say so, so that they recognize that this is who you stand for. These are your people. And therefore, like you said, I'm not gonna be a part of something that's harmful. And I think what's great about that too, at least in my experience in my business, is I inherently attract clients who have respect for the LGBTQ plus community. Right. And because I am visibly, you know, sharing not only my support for the community, but about the fact that I am a part of it. And so I also think that there's an opportunity for us as agency leaders who are part of the community to step forward and be a little bit more vocal about that, so that, you know, we're working with to empower brands that are setting a good example for other people and can also say, I'm a representative of this experience, and therefore these are my red lines. These are my no-goes.
Right.
And granted, I also think it's really important to say there, like, obviously there's a lot of letters in that community nomenclature.
Right.
We're not a monolith.
Right.
And so equally important in that activity is tapping on the shoulders of other people who have a different lens. For example, in my work, if we were going to conduct a campaign that was, you know, especially highlighting and focusing on trans issues, I'm not going to lead that initiative. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my position of power, open the door, and grab a connection or relationship in the trans community and say, hey, do you want to be a part of this project? Your lens is really important to make sure we get this right.
Right.
And oh, by the way, you need to be compensated fairly for the labor that you're providing as part of this project as well.
Yeah, that's the important point. Definitely have to be fairly compensated for your work. Don't want to let that slide. You know, you bring up a good point, and it's well taken, that definitely personalities come into play too. If you are creative and, you know, it's not immediately obvious what group you may represent, and then sometimes you may not want to, that may not be the calling card you want to lead with, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I understand that that dynamic could be tough as well. Definitely tough to navigate with clients. But I think the advice is always, pass the mic, have them leverage their platform for the benefit of the community that they're trying to reach. I don't think you can ever go wrong with that approach.
I don't either. And again, it's like there's so many ways to do that, right? You know, have somebody take over your social media account, have somebody from this community write your newsletter, give them dollars, you know, to create a custom campaign, you know, have them create content. Like, there's so many different ways that you can pass the mic and provide true visibility. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest too, then rather than you sitting there like trying to figure out how do you get it right, you just get the opportunity to let somebody else shine who already knows, you know, the messages that are going to resonate and that people are going to respond to.
Exactly. It's the whole reason we have influencers, right? They know their consumer. And so leverage that same thinking.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts as we wrap this up?
I mean, I know we said this throughout the conversation, but I just really think that, you know, if you are a brand or a part of, you know, an agency experience that is guiding a brand, this is not a conversation that you can participate in 1 month out of the year. And so I think it's really, really important to have the conversation around how are we going to continue to highlight and support LGBTQ plus people year round. Just like the same thing we said in Black History Month, I think that is a critical piece to this conversation. And if the company that you're working for or with can't answer that, again, I would push back and say, like, maybe this is a chance to do some internal work, to do some internal lessons or learning. The other thing I wanted to say here is that, to me, by its inherent nature, allyship is not about me. It's about supporting someone else. And so I think it's really important for organizations to remember that giving back this time of year is way more important than getting attention. And I think that's where a lot of, if you look at these campaigns, the ones that we would say like this is a miss, is because it's making pride about the company as opposed to the community they're claiming to create. So, you know, using this opportunity to shine a light on the real issues at hand, to call it attention to the issue, to, you know, make people aware about changes in legislation, all those things is about giving back. It's not about bringing attention to the brand. And then the last thing I'll say is that, you know, if you can't show support in tangible action, if there's not something that you can point to metric-wise and demonstrate the value of the impact you're creating through these campaigns, whether that's, you know, visibility, dollars raised, different causes you're able to support, et cetera, then there's no real point here. You've got to be able to point to what is the action that you're taking to really, really support these communities rather than just leveraging them. Because consumers are watching and they care about these sort of things.
Right.
What about you? What would you say?
Yeah, I think the big one for me is really around, as a brand, I think you can never go wrong when you say to yourself, how can we help the consumer achieve their goals, right? Mm-hmm. And you said it another way. It's really, it's not about me. It's about the person that I'm trying to reach. And I think if you let that be a North Star, you know, how do I help these folks do what they want to do? And it doesn't matter who the folks are, you know, who the community is. I think if you lead with that, then you're in a really good place to really think about what is the consumer trying to do? And and once you do that research, then you can invest resources appropriately, right? Because once you have that knowledge, then it may mean maybe I don't put something at the front of the store, you know, when consumers first come in. Maybe I am investing in different communities, different nonprofits, or whatever it is. But all that's going to come based on the research. I think if you genuinely just really bring in experts, talk to your internal employees, but do your research and really figure out what the consumer is trying to achieve, and then figure out how your brand can help them achieve that. I think that sets you up in a really good way. And it doesn't matter who the community is. But when we start looking at Pride Month, a Black History Month, a Women's History Month, I think you start to look at this and say, how does this celebration of the community align with what we're trying to do to support them, right? And make it mutually beneficial. I think a lot of it plays out really well once you lead with that empathy and really say, we're just trying to help the community get to where they want to get to. Yeah. And then we'll figure out the monetization some other way. And maybe this isn't a monetization play, right? All that comes in the research, but do that research to figure out how you can help them achieve what they want to achieve. And you may do that research and say, we're not willing to invest. And if that's the case, that's fine. You know, I think people appreciate that honesty.
Yeah. The last thing I was going to say was that I think oftentimes people forget that Pride was not a parade. It wasn't a whole month. It was a rebellion.
Right.
A lot of these movements started as activism and acts of resistance. And so I think that is something to also consider, is if there is no element of willing to stand up in a way that's pushing back against harm or hate during these times, you know, are you really doing anything that's helpful? You know, and I love that you brought the word celebration into the equation, because I think those are the two sides of the coin now.
Right.
You know, we're far enough from a progress perspective, we still got a long way to go, that this can be a time of celebration for these communities. But we also have to remember these are still communities that are fighting for respect and recognition.
Right.
And if you're not willing to step in that fray with them, you're not actually doing anything that's going to deeply support the progress of that movement.
I love it. Beautiful way to end.
Yeah. Okay. So before we wrap up here, a couple of things. I'd love to hear about what you're working on. What are you excited about? Anything that you've got dropping in this month of June?
Yeah. Well, summertime, it's, you know, I think every parent's schedule gets really crazy, but we are working on, I won't call it a survey, but I think I brought it up already, but really trying to catalog a lot of the minority owned agencies around the country. And my thinking has been, you know, and this is specific to M&A deals. I see a lot of companies who are interested in buying other companies or selling to other companies. But when I'm involved in those conversations, I don't see a lot of people that look like me. I don't see a lot of minorities involved in those conversations. And a part of me just hopes it's not out of malice. But I also know that a lot of these databases just don't have listings of minority-owned agencies. And so we're trying to do something about that. So we're going to be kicking that off very soon, building a directory of minority-owned agencies. So that's my big summer project. What about you?
I love that. Mine I mentioned on our last episode, but it's coming up on June 21st. We have an event we're calling Uplift, which is a networking moment for women founders that are really wanting to build impact-oriented businesses or are building impact-oriented businesses. We've got a LinkedIn event. I'll put it in the chat. You've got to register for Zoom via Zoom to get the meeting invite, but we've already got over 50 registrants. So I'm really excited to get even more people. And then I'm also just really excited about our next episode. So we have Maribel Laura, who is coming by. She is a part of VaynerMedia Group, so Gary Vaynerchuk's media organization. And she's going to be talking about helping small businesses navigate social media. And so I think that that's a really powerful conversation that we're going to be having later this month. So I'm super excited about that as well.
I love it. I love it. Perfect. Well, I'll wrap us up. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. You know, this recording will be available right here on LinkedIn after we wrap up, and we'll be live again in 2 weeks.
In addition to that, if you have questions about the show or are curious to see any of our previous episodes, you can head over to creativefriction.com. But we've got 10 episodes so far, so please make sure to check them out on your favorite podcasting platforms. You can always rate, subscribe, and review the podcast there as well. And yeah, we'll be back here again in 2 weeks.
You just listened to Creative Friction. Please leave us a rate and review if you enjoyed the show. And if you want to learn more about Fearless Foundry or The Mead Company, go to our website at creativefriction.com.
All audio and video recordings are owned by Madeline Reeves and Jeff Mead and are recorded live every other Friday on LinkedIn and released once a month. Creative Friction is produced by Fina Valenzuela of Fearless Foundry. Music is by Premium Beats.